Hi, I'm Christine Murray, and welcome to the Developer Podcast, where we talk about how to make places worth living in, which often has to do with the spaces between the buildings as much as the buildings themselves.
My name's Chris Wilson. I'm the Chief Executive of Southwark Charities, and we've been providing almshouses, so a form of charitable housing, a form of extremely affordable charity housing, in Blackfriars since 1753. So we've had a fair bit of practice. And our original almshouses were built on a Georgian model, similar to the almshouses in Hopton Street, which is just around the corner from us in Southwark on Bankside. With the key difference being that our founder didn't leave us a whole pot of money to build one single coherent estate along a very traditional model of a three-sided, you know, sets of homes with a central garden or central courtyard. He left us property and we had to save up the rent. So every time we got enough rent, then we built another block. So it ended up slightly haphazard. And that original footprint was sort of rationalized in the 1880s when we rebuilt the Victorian almshouses, but still, and it became a little bit enclosed. So there were like two L shapes with a central area, which was gardens and places for people to sit and that type of thing. And eventually the Victorian ones got sort of out of date and a bit ramshackle. So they were rebuilt in the early 1970s with the present building that we've got, which is a square with a quadrangle in the middle, again, a gardens in the middle, but a very undistinguished red brick, but, you know, classic sort of late 60s, early 70s building. The one positive thing about that is that we don't have heritage buildings with listings, grade two or higher listings. So we are able to contemplate knocking them down and rebuilding them. And I've spent most of the past 10 years working for the charity trying to find a plan and develop a plan that incorporates rebuilding and reproviding the almshouses, because that's what the charity set up to do, but also to find means of funding that through providing an office building that generates the capital returns and also boosts the long-term income through ground rents and things like that. But it's taken a long time, and there's been lots of cul-de-sacs, if you like, and lots of ideas that came to nothing and lots of offers that came to nothing, until eventually we were able to find an architect with a vision that at the time we thought was actually very radical, and we weren't convinced that the planners would like it. But when the planners saw it, it answered a lot of the questions that they'd had, funny enough, about previous plans that we'd submitted, and overcame those objections. So we were able to make fairly rapid progress. We started that planning process right at the beginning of lockdown in March 2020, and submitted a full planning application in the November. And when I tell you that the planning application comprises 150 odd different reports and surveys, and you know, as well as all the architects' plans, it was a huge amount of work. But largely because of lockdown, it was quite easy to get all the different professionals in a space via Zoom or Teams than it would have been sort of meeting in person. So it actually fostered and facilitated a fairly rapid process. And I'll let Justin talk about, you know, the aspects of the vision. I'll probably come back on other things, but over to you, Justin.
Hi, I'm Justin Nichols, Director of Fathom Architects. Been working with Chris on this for over a year now, a year and a half. I think what's really interesting about this project is you're creating a community hub around older people in London, and I think that's really important as the population ages. I think it's predicted to be 2 million people over 60 in London by 2035. I think it's trying to change the mindset that these people can be make a positive contribution to society and the neighbourhood. So the focus really kind of set at the ground plane in the kind of public spaces is how those things merge together. So we have 62 almshouses over 15 stories. We have 20 stories of flexible workspace alongside that. We have a bar, and then we have 950 square metres of landscape gardens, much of which is accessible by the public. So that interface at the ground plane becomes really central to the design of the project. On that ground floor, we have a porter's lodge and a kind of entrance to the almshouses. We have a residence lounge which overlooks the gardens, and a community hall for use by the public. So that sort of sets the kind of the base layer, if you wish, of uses. On the first floor, then, Chris will be running a series of flexible co-working spaces for other charitable initiatives. So really high quality, affordable charity workspace. And then above that, we start in the residential accommodation. So we have at the second floor, we have a housekeeper's apartment, and we have three guest suites. And those guest suites are really important. So again, going to the point that this is for independent living. So the more we can do to help people live independently longer, the less extra care that they need in time. So having guest suites enables people to come and stay. You may have a temporary carer there in the sort of short term. Above that, we then have apartments, one-bedroom apartments. We have five per floor, and they're paired over two floors. So you have a community of 10 apartments overlooking double height space. The circulation in those areas always ends in windows and double height spaces, and that's really important for things like dementia, where people don't like dead ends and poor levels of daylight. That then goes up to level 15, where we have a rooftop garden, which is about 350 square metres. We have a conservatory space, we have a shaded pergola space, with raised beds for protective gardening. So all of these things are really tuned into creating pockets of space and places that people can interact, and those people either within the building or outside of the building.
So you mentioned that this is for people who are living independently and continuing to live independently while they're in this space. What are the differences then in a design of this kind of project compared to, you know, a residential that you would put in for that period of time when you are, you know, still living independently, but you are in the process of I suppose, at an age when other complex needs might arise?
Well, I think that, you know, quite a few of my colleagues in almshouse charities, some of them have gone down the route of turning themselves into care homes with varying degrees of success, I have to say. It's not something that we've ever really considered because one of the things that I value about my charity is our independence. You know, we're not funded externally in any way, shape or form. We're not part of a council provision. We're not part of a government scheme or anything like that. We're completely independent, and our age partly helps that, because we've been able to build up resources and financial strength, over the past 300 years. So our view is that we've continued to support people to live independently, but inevitably, some people manage that really well. I've got residents now who are in their 90s, I mean, well into their 90s, 94, 95 years old, who are still bright and breezy in the morning. They go off to get their newspaper and their bread and their milk, and they're in and out and all the rest of it. Everything's still working. But then you've got other people who their body starts, the machine part of the body starts to break down, or mental acuity starts to fail, and this type of thing. So there's always been some people for whom we need to find that transition from independent living into a more supportive environment. And that used to be fairly straightforward and fairly quick. But then 2008 financial crash caused a lot of austerity, one of the things that the government of the day imposed was restrictions on council. You know, it was cutting council budgets, basically. And the council's response was to, you know, they were looking for things that they could cut as well. One of those things was actually the number of places in care homes. So now it can take quite a lot longer for someone to transition from our situation into a care or supportive situation. So what we're providing, Justin mentioned it actually, a couple of things he mentioned. First of all, at the ground floor, this concept of a porter's lodge. Now, we lifted that straight out of, you know, old Oxbridge colleges. So that's going to be somewhere on the, it's by the entrance. There will be an awake person in there, either a staff member during the day or security overnight. So there'll be somebody awake 365 days a year, 24 hours a day in that space, which will be really very useful if somebody has an emergency in the night, or, you know, if an ambulance has to be called or whatever. And of course, during the day, it'll be normal things for deliveries and post and Ocado or Tesco shopping or whatever. So that's one level. And then Justin mentioned the housekeeper's flat. So in almshouses in the past, we used to employ what they call wardens. We used to call them wardens in those days. And you can see that has a whole different connotation if you look at it from a different light. And latterly, they've been called scheme managers, trying to find a less harsh word than warden. I think housekeeper is actually quite a good expression, because it's somebody. It could be a couple where one person is the housekeeper and the other person is a maintenance operative, can change a tap washer or change a light bulb or all the simple little things that sometimes need doing. That would be a great combination if we can find it. But the purpose of the housekeeper is that, again, it's somebody there to provide a pastoral care and just to have a kind of an overview and an oversight of the people, especially the people who might be, as I've already said, might be in this transition phase, or whose faculties are starting to go. And we, to be honest, our office is in the almshouse, so we can tell when somebody's starting to change. You know, you get to know them, and then you can experience when they start to get forgetful, or they start to repeat the same things over and over again, or you don't see them so often. So, you know, because we're close to it, you can be aware of that and you can provide them with the support that they need. And that's what the housekeeper's there for, to support people through a transition phase, so that they can move into a situation that's better suited to them.
I think also we talked a lot about what kind of environment the almshouse would be. So at one level, it could be like a block of flats, you go in and you've got a set of pigeonholes, you pick up your post, go up in the lift. Another extreme, you've got the traditional kind of old people's home, which is very kind of institutional and very kind of hospital in feeling. So trying to design effectively the front door and the entrance sequence and the right terms to use for these different things that Chris has been talking about is really important, because it has a sort of civic duty, but it's still private because it's still people's homes. So the Oxford College was as close an analogy we could find to something that's mainly domestic but still has people visiting and different other functions going on.
And you didn't want to go concierge or hotel-ish, this No. idea that there was more of a pastoral care. Was there a reason for that?
Well, I wanted to keep it really, just to use a great word, domestic. That domestic, sort of friendly, neighbourly, you know, that's what housekeeper sort of says to me. Whereas concierge is something that they put in, you know, apartments worth £6.5 million over in Neo Bankside, you know, which my residents look at, by the way. So my residents at the moment, they're paying £30 a week to live in a one-bedroom flat on Bankside, staring out of their window at Neo Bankside development, where you can buy an apartment for £6 million. Great.
Can I just going back to your question, Christine, about the design of the flats? I think what's very interesting is that older people spend more time living in their homes than others. So the quality of space that you're providing is much, much more important. So, for example, we're We're slightly oversized compared to a typical one-bedroom apartment. We have an extra 500 millimeters of floor-to-ceiling height than you'd get in a commercial development. So these things provide better spaces. We provide a Romeo and Juliet balcony, which opens up with a kind of corner window, the seat and so forth. And that visual connection to kind of life outside becomes really important, and that to help deal with loneliness. So if you're frail and you don't go out very often, actually just being able to look down and watch people going to and fro makes a huge difference. So that those connections become critical. We added a window between the kitchen and the circulation space outside that you can screen off, so that if you want that visual connection to see people outside going to their own flats, that's there. So I think it's those layers and layers of connectivity. We introduced a sliding screen between the bedroom and living space. If you're convalescing in bed, you're still connected to the rest of the flat or your other half in another room, and you still get that kind of view out of the window. So it's those, I think it's that connectivity that's really, really different in answer to your original question.
I wanted to ask about that relationship to the offices, because I know you have kind of a shared courtyard with the public and with the building. So first of all, why offices? You know, why not, you know, another residence or a private residence? And second off, how do you anticipate that mixing and mingling going? Or what are your kind of best hopes or wishes, or what are you hoping to orchestrate either through the design or the curation of that space? Between the residents and the workers?
Well, that's an interesting question. The reason for the office is, as I mentioned earlier on, we needed, a substantial capital receipt to be able to reprovide the almshouses, and then also provide the charity with a long-term income to be able to run the almshouses. There's two elements to that, basically. And an office building, given the location, we're on Blackfriars Road. We're very close to Blackfriars Bridge. It's really central London, and in large part that's because of the way that the river bends. So you can draw a straight line from Westminster to the Tower of London, and it cuts right through our site. So it's really very, very central. And there's been quite a lot of major office development in the area, so it's proving to be a very popular location and a very desirable location for commercial tenants. So it made sense to go down the route of an office. I have to say, in earlier iterations, when we were looking, by the way, this development is only using half of the site that we own, so there's another half. And before we found Fathom and the present plan, we were looking at plans for the entirety of the site, and that would have comprised an office and a residential tower and almshouses and, well, something else, a hotel or, you know, whatever. And in fact, one of the things that we were looking at for the residential was a retirement village, but again, a vertical retirement village. And, you know, there are companies that do that. Because actually, Bankside, you know, where we are, where we're located, is a fantastic cultural amenity in London. You know, just you know, you've got the Tate Modern 5 minutes away. You've got the Globe a couple of minutes beyond that. A National Film Theatre in the South Bank. You know, the Old Vic. The Many a Chocolate Factory. If I could go on, there's so much richness there. And that, I think, obviously it's a great attraction for everybody, but for those sort of wealthier older people who are sort of trading down from their Islington Victorian semi to come and live in Southwark, you know, anyway, that could be something for the future. Who knows? I don't know. Anyhow, the space that we're creating at the back, this has been an interesting discussion that we had with the council, because they were saying, well, are you going to be fencing it off? Is it going to be exclusively for the residents? Well, the reality is, no, we're not, and no, it isn't. Because I think it'd be very unlikely that people would come and sit out in a garden that has this open feeling, unless it's a particular type of event or a current, or whatever. And that's why we've given them the roof terrace. So the roof terrace is exclusive to the residents of the almshouse. The space in front, I see that very much. And we've tried to design it, the landscape architects have designed it with a softer, you know, more, you know, grass and hedging and shrubbery and that type of thing at the northern end, which is outside our residence lounge. And that might tempt them out on a sunny day, a group of them sit around a picnic table or something. And the southern half is a bit harder paved because it's going to be part walkway, because people will come along Nicholson Street and they'll cut across to walk through up to Suffolk Street. But it also spills out in front of this community hall or community amenity or village hall that we're creating on the ground floor for anybody in the area who wants to use it for anything they want. So whether it's a yoga class or a creche or a Pilates or a birthday party or a film night or any one of a thousand things, that can happen there. And if it's in the summer, you can open up the big French doors and you can step out and you can spill out into this area outside. I guess that eventually the office users will be tempted to come and sit around the quiet side of the nowhere to sit outside on Blackfriars Road, and why would you want to anyway? Because it's, you know, smelly and dirty and all that stuff. They'll come round. They'll sit in the garden with a few colleagues and have a sandwich. That's what'll happen. But it'll take them time to find it, and it'll take them time to feel welcome. And you know, and we'll do what we can to try and foster that. And you know, depending on who ends up, you know, working and taking up the space, an awful lot of firms these days, they've got programs where they want to let people volunteer. They want to let people work with different groups. I can see opportunities for them to befriend some of the older people or to take part in some of the things that we're putting on. You know, if we're putting on an event or something in this community space, they can come and take part in that. They could use it themselves and invite people. So, and of course, we've got a community around us as well. You know, there's a housing association block of flats just to the on our northern half, and there's a low-rise estate to the southern side. So there are people living around, and it's important, I think, that it's still a place where people are able to live. It's not just where people go to work and then go home. I mean, that's what's happened to the City of London, by and large, thanks to the development that's gone on there. I want it to be a place where people, yeah, they feel I'm at home and I've got my friends and people that I see and people that I work with and people that I help. And it's all a bit woolly and it's all a bit idealistic, but I think we can make it, I think we can foster the willingness and the engagement, basically.
Well, certainly the cultural offer in that area is quite remarkable. And in many ways, no other residential development would, other than the Barbican, really would have such an easily doorstep amenity of cultural attractions. But one question that I was wondering about was that one question that we get is often around high-rise living in general. I mean, those traditional almshouses that were low-rise, you know, this sense, which is really quite UK-specific, that high-rise living is somehow antisocial. And I know, Justin, you mentioned those kind of gathering spaces around at the end of the hall, but I think it's an interesting thing to address. There's some models, like you mentioned, the vertical village, or people who are trying to challenge this idea that high-rise living is somehow anti-neighbor or anti-city. But were there models that you drew from, or inspiration that you drew from, or you know, is this kind of a, would you say, you know, that you would like to challenge that assumption?
Well, I certainly would. My experience of my existing almshouse, which is ground floor, first floor, so two levels. The people and bearing in mind the pool from which we draw our residents, they because there are eligibility criteria. So typically, my residents have come from council housing, or social housing, housing associations. They don't own their own property. And many of them have said to me over the years, we don't like living on the ground floor. We feel vulnerable. And if you translate that back into, you know, a high-rise block off the Old Kent Road, you can understand why they might feel that way. So we've never had a pushback at all about stacking them up, so to speak. The challenge, though, is how do you do that without, as Justin mentioned earlier on, creating this sort of anonymous, you know, block of apartments? How do you foster encounter? How do you facilitate encounter? How do you foster community? And here's an interesting thing. So my residents, they live in this four-square building, and there's a garden in the middle. And like all people, they don't get on with everybody. You know, they've got little cliques. Some of them sit in the garden. Some of them go and sit on a terrace. Some of them don't go and sit with anybody. You know, some of them stay in their flat all day. Some of them go out all day. You know, there's the whole range of human experience and activity there. So, and there's a lounge. And so we've offered things over the years, whether it's been activity or an exercise class or knitting or bingo or whatever. And we've offered things, and sometimes we've had pushback saying, actually, no, that's what they do in old people's homes, and we're not an old people's home, even though they're in their 80s. And sometimes it's like, yeah, they'll take it on and they'll do it. They won't all do it, you know, they'll all do something different. So you can talk about community, but you can't force it on people, and you can't force people to take part in it or to engage with it. All you can do, and I think this is what we've done incredibly well with this almshouse design, is create spaces where people are likely to encounter somebody, and hopefully, because it's not like they've got an appointment to get to most of the time, they can sit down for 10 minutes and have a natter. And actually, the main space for that is outside the lifts, which is where they're going to be coming in and out of the building.
We spent a lot of time, and actually we reduced the amount of communal space, particularly around the flats, because you know, you have your living space and you have 62 flats. You might have somewhere between 62 and 120 residents. To actually make that more compact, we put the communal space down on the ground floor. We design it in a way so that you can look in, and if there's somebody in there you don't particularly want to spend time with, you can carry on walking, so you're not sort of getting stuck. We looked at all sorts of different examples of co-living, student housing, build-to-rent, hotels. St. Pancras Hotel, for example, on the very top floor, they have balconies between the corridors and the floor below. It's like, can we do that? So we're getting that more vertical connections. If you go to Europe and you look at blocks of flats, very often the fire escapes there is open to the corridor. So we set the fire engineer the challenges, like, can we actually have open corridors between levels? And if we can do it in Europe, they might have different regulations to us, but fire doesn't move differently. So it's really challenging those boundaries. And I think weirdly, something like workspace planning is a really good example, where people put a lot of time and effort in putting recycling bins in particular places, little kitchenettes, to encourage people to walk around their workplace. It's exactly the same design process here. And to a certain extent, I think some of it is an experiment. And I think it's very interesting, but there are plenty of, you know, vertical living models that we've drawn from, and we've been lucky enough to be able to put all those design features into a building that I think probably in a commercial residential building would have been removed. So, you know, you'd make an extra bedroom out of the end of the corridor where you got the window, for example. So I think that having that little bit of extra generosity makes a huge difference to the quality of the space that we provided.
One of the things that was in Southwark's own planning document from like 10 years ago actually mentioned the word vertical community. And it's something that we picked up on, partly because we're one of the very, very few charities, almshouse charities, old almshouse charities, sorry, that's building a brand new almshouse in an urban setting in the centre of London. Actually, we've got a site. You know, if we had 100 million quid in the bank, we've got a site that's big enough for us to completely clear it and build a lovely traditional old almshouse with, you know, three-sided or four-sided, you know, very lavish gardens and all the rest of it. And maybe if we'd had the money, we would have done that. But we don't have that sort of money, and we don't have that, you know, prospect. So what we did instead was really, and Fathom were fantastic about this, was really say, how can we make a vertical community work? How can we break that sort of older model? You see, I love old almshouses. I mean, they're beautiful buildings. Let's not, you know, nothing to disagree with there. But a lot of them came out of a very paternalistic view, a lot of them quite a parochial view, and often they were really designed as very insular communities, inward looking. You know, it's real retirement from the world almost. You know, and I'm sure, you know, they had their working life, and that's all they wanted. I don't think older people today want that. I mean, I am actually a pensioner. Age-wise, I'm more than eligible to live in my aunt's houses. There's other reasons why I don't qualify. But I'm not looking to turn inwards and away from the world. And I don't think modern people are, frankly. I think they still want to be engaged. I think they still want to be outward looking. So, but you still, I think the challenge, as I said before, is providing people with the opportunities and the spaces for encounter, linger, you know, and then more formal community, whether it's activity or party or fun or, you know, whatever. And sorry, I'm just going to keep going for one moment, because one of my trustees would never forgive me if I didn't mention the art strategy. So one of my trustees who lives just over the road, actually, is an artist, and her and a colleague of hers have produced an art strategy for the almshouse. So bearing in mind what we just talked about, all the cultural amenity, and particularly the Tate Modern and the Gerwood Space and the Hayward Gallery and all those sorts of things, we are working on a whole program, on a multi-level, multi-stranded program of bringing art, small A art, into the almshouse. So right now there's projects going on, capturing people's experiences of their life before the almshouse, their life in the almshouse, as they transition from our almshouse into the one that where they'll be living for the next few years while we rebuild ours, capturing those stories and encouraging people to share their stories. But there'll also then be art that they can take part in, whether it's art classes or art visits or. And then we'll have a rolling program of artistic things happening in the almshouse. And some of them will be a bit more static. So, you know, we're talking to guys in St. Thomas's about borrowing some of their massive collection of paintings to hang around the almshouse corridors. You know, fantastic. If we can afford the insurance. And other things will be a little bit more, you know, see it and it's gone. So it's maybe a little video installation or something of that kind. But it's really trying to just engage people with a topic that we all find a bit challenging, you know, capital A art, oh my God, that's not for me. Actually, it's for everybody. It's just a way of, it's how you introduce it. It's how you bring it to people, basically. So that's a really, really exciting aspect of what we're trying to do.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful way to participate in the storytelling and the creation of the place, the curation of this place as well. One question I wanted to ask, you mentioned those community spaces downstairs. I mean, one thing that's often commented about is that as people kind of seek to, you know, move into active, you know, still are still active, but are seeking to downsize into smaller properties, can I still host my grandchild's birthday party? Can I still have Christmas dinner or, you know, host a dinner party if I'm in this much smaller space? How did you deal with that, Justin, actually? You know, is that what that community space is for? Or are these flats kind of designed to host people that, you know, not necessarily sleep over?
Visitors, I think, are really important, and even spaces for children to play. So children being bored is one of the leading reasons why people leave visiting their elderly parents more quickly. So the rooftop garden is really important for that. There's internal space up there, so you can hold a birthday party, you can hold a dinner. The communal space on the ground floor is much more about interacting with the public, so bringing people in from outside. And as Chris said, creating those layers of privacy, if you wish. So you have internal community, you have external community, and you have your own spaces. So that was really critical, I think, in getting that to work. So making sure that people come and stay as long as they possibly can without feeling uncomfortable. We've got some guest suites on the second floor to help that as well.
So one thing that Fathom were absolutely brilliant at was consulting with my existing group of residents. And we had a whole rolling series of those and looked at lots of different aspects, you know, of the individual flats and then the shared spaces and the communal spaces. And one of the comments that was made that specifically relates to the question you've just asked, somebody said, I want the residence lounge to feel like an extension of my living room. So it's not like this, you know, where you walk in and it's impersonal and it's, you know, and it's empty and it, you know, it's somewhere where, yes, you can have a party or you can have your friends over, you know, or whatever. So it feels like it's just more of my living space. And that was a key thing.
Has that changed your approach to your existing building? Has any of the stuff that you've learned made you think, oh, actually, I'd like to change the way our existing old house works?
Well, I suppose in a way, I mean, when I started, there is a residence lounge and it was kept locked. I know, bonkers. So nobody ever used it, obviously. So the first thing I did was unlock it and then I redecorated it and then I put some carpet down and then I got a big TV on the wall and, you know, and a piano in the corner and people started using it. You know, not everybody, not all the time, but there's regular birthday parties that go on in there. There's a weekly bingo thing and there's a weekly knitter circle and there's an exercise class that goes on in there. And yeah, I think, again, it's just a matter of thinking up. Look, I'm not very good at thinking up things. So other people are good at that. So
I love this point about children getting bored and then needing to leave, which does seem that. And also that experience of visiting someone in, you know, typically it's in a care home setting, and that real feeling of being in an other space that doesn't belong to you, or it's that strange, not hospital, but not uncomfortable environment. And I think that I can identify that with not wanting that to be in this new development.
And I think that's what's been really interesting about the project is that it is almshouses, and almshouses are a very unusual typology. And trying to find the analogy for those types of space, we talked earlier about the Oxbridge College, who had a similar issue when we worked with MRG landscape architects on the garden. This is the opposite of a traditional London square, where you've got a fence all the way around, you've got a key, and you go in and use that garden. This had to be much more open and much more, the transition between public and private has to be really clever. And we worked really, really hard to do that. So each of these spaces that we're talking about and these different uses are completely unique, I think, to an almshouse. So that's why we've always had to kind of challenge ourselves on each of those design moves up and down the building. Christina, you mentioned about going back to the vertical living comment. This came up in the planning committee and there's a lot of discussion about this within the councillors. And Chris brought one of his residents along and they asked him what he thought about vertical living. And he just turned around and said, I've lived in the tower blocks, I've lived in the houses, front doors, I've lived in flats. And he said, I don't care where I live, it's all about community. So he had no segregation that we have in our kind of academic thinking about vertical living. He's just interested in who am I living with, what is my community? And I think that's a really important thing that sometimes we get lost in this kind of train of thought. And actually it's quite a distraction.
And at the end of the day, typologies too, because at the end of the day, these are homes for people. That kind of some go ahead.
Going back to Chris's point about the art program, mm-hmm. and the consultation is actually when you meet these people, suddenly you're designing, you're not just designing an abstract, you know, so it's like you're not designing units anymore, you're designing John's home. And that's a really interesting kind of shift in mindset. And I think when you look at larger regeneration projects, we talk about, oh, we'll put a community garden here and there. But actually, if you start identifying the actual people that are going to run the shop, or what kind of art centre you're going to be providing, and who's going to be running it, it becomes much more people-centric. And you're starting your journey of placemaking much sooner than just talking about it in the abstract.
Can I ask, what were the planning? You mentioned there was issues where they were deeply concerned with previous schemes. What were those, or perhaps the kind of key concerns that they had on your earlier ideas?
So I think this is quite important, where Chris touched on the fact that the office building is there to provide the funds to build the almshouse. So, and for me, that's an amazingly brave thing to do, where the office development is there for social good. It's a really unusual example of development in that sense. And the original scheme had an office building, a garden, and a residential building, which is a very straightforward kind of arrangement. But the space that was left in between was very narrow. I think it was somewhere around about 12 metres. So you've got huge overlooking issues. You've got a garden that doesn't really work because it's shaded. So actually, by pushing the two buildings together, effectively creating a party wall between the two of them, it enables us to create a garden that I think is about 19 metres. But your perception of the size of the space also includes all the pavements, the roads over to the garden on the other side. So that was the key thing that really unlocked the whole project. And again, that's just thinking a little bit harder about a better answer.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we're thrilled with the answer that Fathom came up with, because, you know, it's a great looking building. And here's the other thing, you know, we're not like any other, well, first of all, we're not a property developer. We're a charity, and, you know, we provide physical property. We're not just the landowner and the freeholder. We're also going to be the occupiers for the next, well, for the duration of the building. So it's very important. You know, it's great that Justin sort of segued into designing somebody's home. And that's really what we're about, is providing long-term, secure, affordable homes for people, not just a flat. You know, it's a home, and we people want their own front door, and you know, that's fantastic. That's what we're there for. But because it's ours, and because we are going to be there, and, you know, my successors, and, you know, and all the rest of it, we want this building to stand there in 100 years' time and look just as good as it does when it gets built, as it does on this picture here, and everything inside it still works. You know, I mean, obviously it'll be well maintained, but you know, we're building for the long term. And, you know, I look around at a lot of London development, office development, and you can see it's very much of today, or of actually about 10 years ago when it was being dreamed up. And I can tell you now, in 20 years time, all these big glass things, they'll be gone. Something else will have taken their place. That's London's, in a way, that's one of the great strengths of London. It sheds its skin very readily. People are ruthless. You know, this building doesn't work anymore, or it's going to cost too much to refurbish, so we'll knock it down and start again. That happens all the time. We're not like that. We want to put something there that will stand the test of time, that will look good, that will work well, that will provide a great living environment, a great working environment for the office people. And that, you know, and I think, you know, one of the conversations that we had early on, you know, in terms of just ideas, if you walk around Southwark, there's a lot of old warehouse type buildings that have had multiple uses over the years. You know, they're 100 years old. They were a warehouse. They've been a theatre. They've been apartments. They've been offices. There's a restaurant. You know, there's something about the nature of the building that lends itself to this more plastic. I mean that in the sort of elastic plastic sort of sense, that it's not fixed and rigid and, you know, immovable and unchangeable. You know, it has this sort of flexibility. And somewhere we've tried to incorporate some of those design elements into the almshouse so that it doesn't look a million miles away from a Victorian warehouse. Actually, if you look at the almshouse particularly, it has that sort of vibe. And I think, therefore, that in 100 years' time, it's going to look great. And it's still going to do what it says on the tin, you know?
Loose fit, long life. That's what we all want, too. Nice long life. I don't know what the loose fit would be, but maybe some nice, comfortable clothes, perhaps. I want to thank you both for speaking to me about it today. It's been really interesting to hear about the almshouse, and congratulations.
Thank you, Christine. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you, Chris. Christine.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you like what we do, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/thedeveloperuk. Thanks a lot.